1, 2.
Hello and welcome to Round the Houses with me, Sarah Beeney. This is a podcast where I meet fascinating people in their homes and find out what stories they have to tell about where they've lived and loved. The home is really where the heart is, and I'm here to uncover the real nature of my guests and what they're like behind closed doors. On this episode, it's June Sarpong, MBE. TV presenter, author, campaigner, production company director, June Sarpong is a one-woman media powerhouse. As well as conquering TV in the UK, she's also had lots of success in the USA. No mean feat for a British presenter. She was living in the States for a while, but as a London girl at heart, she's back in the UK. June's actually waiting for the builders to be finished with renovating her home. So I met her in the very heart of the city to find out where she's living at the moment. So, hello, June Sarpong.
Hello, Sarah Beeney.
Thank you very much for doing this. It's very exciting.
Pleasure.
I'm dying to hear all about what you've been up to, but we're getting up to your apartment in a minute.
Yes.
And in the meantime, tell me where it all started.
I will.
So I started at Kiss FM when Kiss had just become legal and it was like the height of cool. So that was when Jay, Soul to Soul, the Oasis Boys, like, it all merged. It was all these different sounds that somehow merged because it was like cool London. So like the things that the kids are doing now, like your Stormzy's and your Rudimentals and all of that, we kind of had that 20 years ago or whatever. So I was like the young kid of that group. And then, yeah, that's kind of how I got started. So it was such a great time to be in London. It was so cool, just cool. Yeah.
So everything was cool at that
time.
Yeah,
but now I'm the most uncool person on the planet. I don't know who anyone is. Until they're number one. And like, and I'll go to parties, and I never go out, but sometimes I'll go to parties. Weirdest thing, Sarah, and there'll be someone who's like the biggest star in the world. I have no idea who they are.
So is that just because the scene moved on,
yeah,
or you just
we all grew
to...
up. I mean, we're all in our 40s now, so it's kind of like a bit ridiculous if you're trying to sort of keep up with the kids. So,
yeah, although you still look as though you're in your
20s. Well, I'm not.
You know in your head you're not.
I know, and I know in my body I'm not. I know in my knees that I'm not.
So you were 16, 17 when you started.
Yeah, I was 16.
And where were you brought up? How did you
manage
to get there?
Yeah, so I was raised in East London, in Walthamstow. Do you know Walthamstow?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Before it became gentrified. So I was there when it was, you know, one of the poorest communities.
Maybe it was... because of you.
Darling, of course.
Important.
Darling. And so I was there when it was a very poor community, but I was there at a really interesting time because it was when the gentrification was starting. So it meant that my school had a lot of sort of middle-class do-gooders who didn't want to send their kids to private school that sent their kids to our school. So our PTA was fabulous with amazing corporate links. And so I got work experience at KISS when I was 16, or even 15, I think. I was 15 when I got the work experience. And what they did was, because I got on so well with them, they allowed me to come back in the holidays to work while I did my A-levels. And then when I finished my A-levels, they offered me a job. And my African parents, and for African immigrants, education is everything. That was the whole point of coming
to
Britain.
So you were a disaster.
Disaster. Oh, you're bringing shame on this family. Oh, why? Why? God, please
help
us.
Be a doctor.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer. You got it. You know a couple of Africans. And so literally they went nuts and flew in uncles and aunts from Ghana.
Had tell
big,
you off.
Yes, big family meeting. And the only person who stood by me was my dad. And he said, I'm going to give you a year. And if this nonsense, which is what they called it, nonsense does not work, you're going to university. And so I thought, I've got a year. And so my mother was distraught, crying, blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, so luckily the nonsense worked out and KISS offered me a full-time job. And now my mother tells everyone, oh yes, I said to her, follow her dreams. I always believed.
You think, you've rewritten history there.
So a bit of a disappointment initially.
Yes, initially.
And
yes.
do they now think that you do a job?
Oh,
now?
They love it. They love it.
So they're not still saying, when are you going to get a proper job?
No. Now it's like, the pride of the community.
And what did they do when they came over here?
Well, she was a nurse. So fortunately for her, she was able to get a job straight away. And then my dad was the first member of his family to go to university. My mother's family were very wealthy Ghanaians. And my father's family were so poor. So, you know, the kinds of images you see of Africans in villages and blah, blah, blah. My dad's family are from that kind of abject poverty.
Gosh, your mother's family must have been horrified. They were.
Yeah. They didn't think it was a good deal. But my dad was very handsome and he was very successful young. So because he got a scholarship when he was 11, so he then went to the best school in Ghana and was educated alongside the Kofi Annans and all of those. Those are all his classmates. And so he then went to university and then got a good job within the government and started, you know, making quite a bit of money. So they didn't mind because he was handsome and he was successful.
And you can forgive.
You can forgive the poor stock.
Yes.
The villagers.
The dodgy stock.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, so he rose right the way he climbed from the bottom of the ladder all the way up.
He really did, Sarah. I mean, a few years ago, I went back to his village because, I mean, I knew my mother's village, but I never really knew my dad's village. I mean, I'm very close to my dad, but it's almost as if once he came to the city in Ghana, he forgot his sort of village roots, as it were, because they're really, really, really poor. And so I went back there a few years ago and I couldn't believe it. I was like, because he's built quite an amazing life for himself in America. And I'm like, I cannot believe you started here and there's no way I would have had that level of grit and determination to make that leap. And even just be comfortable with his new life when you see where he started. It's kind of amazing.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Because actually, the journey that some people take is so massive. And I often say to my kids that if you don't succeed in something, it's pathetic.
It's pathetic.
Because you're already, like, most of the way up the ladder anyway. You don't even have to try. Yeah. You've already got a house
and a roof. Nice, successful parents. Because, you know, a lot of people have successful parents that aren't very nice. Yours are nice.
Well, I should say that too. But really impressive. The longer you've climbed, the harder you've climbed, the more impressive in the way it is.
I agree.
So they then decided to emigrate over.
My mother's family came first. And then my mother was quite young when she came here. She was probably about 15, 16.
I see. So they didn't come over together.
No. They met here. Yeah. Right. No. If they had been in Ghana, it's highly unlikely those two would have been together because their backgrounds were so different.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. That's amazing out there.
Yeah.
But they'd both come over here. Yes. So that kind of equaled out their backgrounds.
Exactly, yeah.
So both their parents are here. So your grandparents were here.
My grandparents were here for many years and then my grandmother died. My father's parents were always in Ghana. So with them, we moved back. So with my parents, the idea was, we were all born here, but the new government came into power and my dad was part of that group. And so the idea was, you know, they were young and idealistic. They would go back to Ghana and participate in building a new Ghana. And so we moved back when I was, I think, two. And the idea was we were going to stay. And then the coup happened. And so one of my earliest memories actually is of armed militia breaking into our home in the middle of the night, threatening us. And again, I say my dad's very charismatic. I do not know how he did this, but he somehow managed to convince them that he needed to leave to get the keys to our family safe and they should come back. I mean, and they agreed. And we literally...
He is charming,
isn't
he?
Yeah, he is. And so we literally left that night with our passports, clothes off on our back, and went to one of my mother's cousins, I think, it must have been one of her cousins, and then flew back to Britain the next day with nothing. So we went from this lovely life in Ghana with maids and, you know, servants and so on. And, you know, my parents were young and they were part of the in crowd in Ghana. And it was a new Ghana. And, you know, all the elite were sort of very excited because their person was in power, and ended up here with nothing, literally turned up at the council office, homeless. The lucky thing was we were British citizens. So we ended up in a hostel for a bit and then on a council estate. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a journey.
Wow.
So it's not all up the ladder, no, it's down darling. Again.
Yeah, story of my life.
That is amazing. So how old, you were two when you moved to
Ghana? Yeah, so I must have been about five when that happened. Yeah.
So you will remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Actually at five, most people don't remember anything, but that would have been such a significant
moment. Yes, it was. And it was, you know, such a dramatic change as well. So, yeah.
So, at five, your parents... They are resilient, aren't they?
They are.
Your dad's journey.
I think immigrants have to be. They really do. Because think about it. You leave the security of your home, and most immigrants would rather be in the country they're from, but for whatever reason, you can't be, and you go somewhere else, and often you go somewhere else where you're not wanted. So to be able to survive that, you have to be resilient. You have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think it was that gave your parents the skills to come over here?
Yes.
And, I mean, obviously they took you all back to Ghana and then they returned back to a different life.
To a different life.
Because they'd had to take it, they took it all to Ghana.
Yeah, they took it all to Ghana. And they bought property. You know, my dad was very entrepreneurial. So, you know, at a young age, he bought, so the sorts of properties that they bought in London when they came the first time, if they'd kept, you know, we'd be super wealthy.
But they sold all
they
of that.
Sold
when
that
they went
to go back to Ghana, and then they left. They left everything. So we had nothing. We literally had no money. So we had to borrow from family members when we got here. We literally had no money.
And do you remember the house in Ghana, what it was like at all?
So yes, stunning.
It had a swimming pool.
Yeah. So it was a place in Ghana called Dansomine, which is like the sort of Kensington of Ghana, of Accra. I mean, there were a few sort of nice hot spots in, and we had a huge compound. So with our families, the way African families are, a bit like what the royals have got at Kensington Palace. So literally all the families live on the compound. You don't live alone. We don't believe in nuclear families. So you have extended family all living on one on compound, but you each have your own home. So we had
perfect
actually. Yeah. You got free babysitter all the time.
Exactly. Great.
Yeah, the kids. And so we had this huge compound, massive, acres and acres in like a real prime part of Ghana, and we had obviously the biggest house on the compound. And my dad's family lived with us. So my dad's parents lived on the compound.
So they'd moved away from the poor area.
From the village,
from
a small village in Kumasi. And so they lived with us, and his sisters lived with us, and her kids lived with us.
And so what happened when they fled?
What happened was the army took over the house. So the army took over the house. I can't remember. I think I have to check with him, but I think the army had the house. It was like an army base for about 4 or 5 years.
And then, what about your family?
They were all displaced. They had to go back to the village. Yep.
So they were sent back to the village?
Yeah, we came to the UK.
And did your parents decide to come back to the UK? Because they had British passports.
Yeah, and it was the best option, you know. Yeah. They would also, if he had stayed, he probably would have been killed. Because
he was a political activist.
Yeah, so, he wasn't a political activist. He was part of the elite enjoying. It wasn't enough. No, love to say it was, but it wasn't.
Amazing. So then you came over here and your parents were put into temporary housing.
So I know that process. Yeah, I totally know that process.
Bumpy ride.
And also you have no say. Imagine that. You have no say over where you're going to live.
So they were given a council flat.
Yes, in a place called Leytonstone, in a estate called Cat Hall Estate, which Prince Charles deemed uninhabitable.
Right.
So
but
Prince
they
Charles,
it anyway.
Yeah, darling, it was still home. So Prince Charles came to visit Leytonstone, you know, one of those royal visits, and they took him to Cattle Estate, and he was so traumatized. He later did an interview to say people should not have to live like this. Wow. And as a result, the block was torn down. So actually, I recently went back there and did a film for Newsnight on the new development. So the block was torn down. Luckily, we'd got some money before then, so we moved into a house in Walthamstow, you know, once my parents had done it. Well, my parents split up, but then, you know, we moved into a better place in Walthamstow. So by the time it was torn down, we'd already moved. But what's interesting is it's a real example of how social housing can be done right and how you really can give the poor dignity, and there's no reason for poor people to live in squalor. So that place was torn down and replaced with a beautiful cul-de-sac. Like, if you went there now, you would think these were sort of private properties, and they're not. They're social housing. Yeah.
But your parents, your dad got a job.
Well, my dad moved to America. They split up.
Okay.
And so my dad moved to the States. My mother was doing very well with nursing. So we were able to sort of become, you know, get a bit more money. So we moved into Walthamstow. We got a nice house there.
Okay, and rented house, is it?
No. Yeah, they got. Oh, no, they're always very
canny.
Yeah, where they could be. Yeah. Where they could be.
Yeah.
So,
If they could. They were good savers.
Yes.
Worked hard, saved hard.
Yeah, they're that generation.
Totally.
Yeah,
I can just picture them. I bet they're really strict about manners as well, aren't they?
Oh, God, yeah. They're strict about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, strict, strict, strict. So, yeah.
So then you were living in Walthamstow.
Yep. So I moved to Walthamstow when I was, I think, probably 12, 11. So I see myself as a sort of Walthamstow native. I don't really see myself as a Leytonstone person. I still go back there. The market was where I used to hang out with my friends.
Does your mum still have that house?
Yes.
And is that where you'd call home?
Yes. Yeah. So that's still, yeah, I see Walthamstow as home, totally. And it's amazing, like, when I go back to the area, something comes over me. I just feel like, oh, these are my people. For me, when I meet, it's a funny thing, when I meet white working class people, particularly southern white working, I mean, all white working class people, but particularly southern white working class people, something warm comes over me, because that was a community that took in my family. And, you know, when my parents split up, my mother had to work, and it would be the neighbours that would look after us while she was working. There was a real sense of community and a real melting of these two different cultures to create something new, particularly now with all the sort of, you know, xenophobic accusations against this particular sector of society. It just completely annoys me, because when it comes to multiculturalism, that's the group that actually lived it. You know, middle class and upper middle class people didn't have to live it, because immigrants, by and large, couldn't afford to be in their areas. So in terms of the multicultural experiment and the things that we are proud of as a country and see ourselves as an example for the rest of the world, yes, we've had our problems, of course, it's this community that really made it possible. And I think they need to be celebrated for that.
Do you think that the culture that you come from has different challenges and different problems to other minority cultures in this country?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, I think if you look at the Ghanaian community, and it's so funny, Sarah, last night Sir David Adjaye threw a dinner for the Ghanaian president with all of the Ghanaian Londoners. We were like, what is it about this little country? Literally, we had probably 50 of the leading people of colour in this country, and they're all Ghanaians. It's nuts. Oh, yeah. So from David Adjaye, Adwoa Boa, Edward Enifol, editor of Vogue, Charlie Casely Hayford, Lord Boateng. It's kind of crazy. There's so many people you see and you won't even realise. Stormzy, you see they're Ghanaian, you don't know they're Ghanaian. And I think it's because Ghana was one of the first countries, or was the first country, to get its independence. It also has its own kingdom. So even the reverence that we have for the royal family is slightly different, because we also have our own royal family. And that culture is so strong that it doesn't matter where you go in the world or even what's happened to you, there's a level of expectation that success is what we do as a culture. So it's funny, it's interesting that I think Ghanaians, the story of Ghanaians is very different to the story of some other immigrant groups, for sure.
Now, we're in this amazing club, which
Have you been here before?
I haven't. Oh. I haven't. This is the library.
Yes, the library. Which is Covent Garden, London.
such a great location and so cool and hidden away.
Cool, yeah.
As I say, I'm not often impressed by clubs.
Darling.
This is really fabulous. Oh. But you are writer in residence.
I am. So this is so much fun. So I won their Big Read, London's Big Read competition from my new book, Diversify, which talks about lots of the things that we've just been talking about. And as part of the sort of prize, as it were, I become writer in residence here and get to live in the penthouse. How fabulous.
I know. That's so cool. Which we're about to go to, which is really exciting. Yeah. I'm dying to see it.
Yeah, so it's gorgeous. And it's got a lovely terrace, two-story.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Did you think that you were going to ever be a writer? Did you listen in school? Did you work hard?
No. Well, I worked hard. I've got African parents. Got no choice. You know, I was going to get that if I didn't. I didn't work hard.
Not enough of that.
Not enough of that. Exactly.
That's what I say.
And I don't see myself as a writer. You know, I'm like you. I'm a television presenter. Though you're a fabulous businesswoman and entrepreneur as well, darling. I love it. But this was just an issue that I was really passionate about, and I wanted to figure out how to have a conversation around it. And I think a book was the best intro into this topic. And you know, I'm going to do shows around it and so on. But yeah, it's great. And what's lovely is London is being brought together to have difficult conversations, but important conversations, and hopefully connecting Londoners even more so as a result. So to me, I'm really happy to be here, and we're going to be doing a series of salons and so on. So it's really exciting, and it's beautiful. You know, when we go in, you'll see.
So let's go up to your apartment and look around.
Yes,
great.
So we're in the lift now, going up.
Great.
Yes.
Very smart lift.
Very smart.
You have a lift going up to your penthouse.
Darling, of course.
It's worth being a good writer, isn't it?
It is.
Well done. How long did it take you to write the book?
2 years. So, yeah.
And when you started, did you know how it was going to end?
No. Not at all. And when I started, Sarah, none of the crazy Trump madness had started.
And of course.
So, should we go out onto the terrace?
Lovely. Yes. Gosh, so this is you've got a little down, so it's like a flat.
Yeah.
And
clean
a sitting
in.
Room and a kitchen and a terrace.
And look at these beautiful African chairs.
Gorgeous.
From Uganda.
Wow, what a
woven
spot.
Look at this.
That is fabulous.
Our view over central London.
All the time.
All the time.
It's just yours.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to get it for 3 months. Yeah.
And you've got another home that you're
renovating in King's Cross, which is lovely. But
right.
it's a dump at the moment. So yeah.
So you've bought that, and
yes.
What's that like?
By the canal, which is very nice. By the time it's finished, it'll be beautiful. So we'll have to do another one after that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Brilliant. Where did you have before? So currently you've got
this lucky timing. Yeah, I'll tell you the biggest mistake I ever made. So I started, like I said, working in TV really young. So at 19, I bought my first flat in West Kensington, and it was a big flat with a terrace, huge. And I then bought a few more because I was trying to be you. I bought a few more, and then I bought a huge house in Pimlico, which took almost 3 years to renovate, and it was hell. Like, the whole process was so horrible. And also, I was single at the time. I would never do a big renovation like that again, as single. So the house was finished, blah, blah, blah. Moved into it. It was a beautiful house. And then I got a job in America. And so I moved to America, and I rented the house out for a few years. And then I got a really crazy offer for the house. And I thought I wasn't going to move back to London. And so I sold it in 2010, I think. And, you know, I did very well out of it. I mean, in comparison to how much I bought it for. But if I had kept that house now, I would never need to work again. So
hindsight's a beautiful
thing. It's a painful thing.
It is. It certainly
is.
Yeah.
So now I have a smaller property in King's Cross. It's still nice, but it's nowhere near what that was. And the terrible thing is, it's the same price, literally, for what I got then for a massive 5-bedroom house with 2 terraces. I mean, it was a great house just off St. George's Square. Yeah.
Amazing.
At a time when you could afford to buy there. Yeah.
And so you didn't keep the other flats?
No, I sold them all to get the house. Okay. Yeah, so that's my mistake. I wish I had actually kept them. But I didn't think anything of it. Because also, it was so easy then. It was so easy.
Well, also, I think you needed the money to buy the next thing. Yeah. So you couldn't just, it wasn't unlimited money.
No, it wasn't unlimited money, no way. Yeah.
Obviously, in hindsight, we'd have all killed ourselves and kept everything.
Yeah.
It'd be brilliant.
And no one knew that London property would become what it's become. No. Yeah, no one knew that. No.
And in a way, it's so sad that it has.
Yes.
Really, because it's not good for the people living in London.
No.
It's good for a few people.
A few people time ago, yeah.
But
yeah.
Ideally, it wouldn't be as inflated as it
is. No. Do you think that will change? What's your expert opinion?
I don't think it's going to go up.
Mm.
I think it's unlikely that it will
plateau.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it'll hold.
Even after Brexit, do you think?
Well, I still can't quite get my head around whether Brexit is definitely going to happen.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
So that house will be renovated,
yes.
And then when do you move in?
So that should hopefully by the end of the year.
Be exciting. And that's going to be home again. So you had a home in America.
Had a home in America, which was in LA. Then I had another place in New York. So I was in LA for 4.5 years and New York for 4 years. Those two I rented.
Working on television now.
Yeah,
there.
So
is it better working on American television or British television?
Well, I think the teams are nicer in Britain.
Okay.
But the money's better in America.
I love it.
It depends what you want.
Yeah.
So have you done American TV?
No, I haven't.
Right, okay.
No.
So when I went to America, I was in a very serious relationship. The idea was we were going to move to America together. And so I went first to sort of find a home for us and get set up and everything. And that long distance stuff doesn't work. And so literally, I was there probably about maybe 8-9 months setting everything up, and he'd come, you know, every 6 weeks or so. And then when it came to actually moving into the place together, it's like, it's going to work. And so we split up, which was tough.
Very
traumatic. Yeah, you know, because it was a serious relationship. Oh, God, I must have been about 27, 28, I think, yeah. And so it was, you know, it was a very serious relationship. You know, we were going to get married and all of that. I then found myself single in LA. And I have to say, dating in LA is kind of nuts. I wouldn't recommend it. It's fun in that you literally always, there's always someone to go on a date with. But it's weird, that whole dating scene in America, they, you know, in terms of getting serious, people can date forever without actually getting serious. And as a Brit, that's so not what we do. So I found it very bizarre. So I was in LA for 4.5 years, and then I moved to New York, which was even worse. But New York, I was then in a serious relationship. So I was with somebody for a few years there. And again, part of the reason that I moved back was when that didn't work out, I thought, wow, well, if I end up marrying an American, I won't be able to come home. I'll have to stay. And so I thought, well, while this hasn't worked, let me come home. And so, yeah.
Okay. So you do, this is home, and you wouldn't want to be over there.
No.
So you ran away before you met another American?
Yeah.
Quick, run.
At the airport, I wasn't talking to anyone on the plane. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. Look, anyone who's handsome, look at the floor. Brilliant.
Let me hear your accent.
Yeah. Yes. Only talk to you if you're British.
Yeah.
I love it. So you desperately avoided any more America. Mind you, you know what will happen is you'll meet an American.
Look at you.
That'll be it, won't it? You'll be like, back to avoid them.
Yeah.
So have you got someone now?
No, I met someone briefly just last year, but no. So now I'm single. Yeah.
You're single?
Yeah. I didn't expect to be single now, but I'm all right with it because, you know, I have a really busy life.
So this is the penthouse. Is
yes.
All the furniture that they've given you.
Yes, totally. So Ronald sees himself as a bit of an interior designer, God bless him.
And he owns the library.
Yes, the library. And so a lot of this stuff is from his travels. And I think what I love about it is there's pieces that sort of remind me of home, which is why I'm so comfortable here, because the way he's designed it, you know, if you see my properties, I'll send you images, is this is the kind of style that my houses are as well. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So we kind of have similar taste. And, you know, a lot of the rugs and the pieces are, you know, sort of vintage, or they are from his travels around the world. So, yeah.
So he's a bit of an eclectic collector.
He is.
I love this table. So this is a table which has got three massive fake leather-bound books.
It's beautiful.
Which end up at the right height to have a coffee table.
So it's gorgeous,
isn't it? It's really lovely.
And sort of throughout the whole building, there's lots and lots of, you know, first edition books all over. It's just gorgeous. So
it's full of books, full of old pictures.
Yep.
It all looks a little bit like it could have been kind of collected from...
Yes.
A random, it's not bought,
yeah,
is it?
No, it's all collected. Yeah, it's not IKEA.
What's the thing that you would like to, if you could have any job at all?
What a great question. Do you know what I'm going to tell you? To be a mother.
Would you?
Yes, yes.
Gosh, you'd like to be a mother.
Yeah, if I could have any job, I think that's the most important job in the world. And I think it's so underrated, actually. You know, mums don't get enough credit for the work they do. I mean, we love dads too, obviously.
So would you like to have children?
Of course, yeah, definitely. But I wouldn't have them alone.
Wouldn't you?
So I have friends who, you know, I have one friend who's going through the whole process on her own. And I personally wouldn't do that, because I do believe that, you know, a family unit is the best environment to raise a child. But I'm open that there are different types of families, so I don't think that that's only a man and a woman, but I think that a single household is difficult. It's not an easy way to raise children, and I personally wouldn't do that through choice.
Right. And how old are you now?
40.
You're 40.
Yeah.
So do you feel in any way that you need to
get on with it?
Yeah.
I love
or
you.
Not.
Well, no. Well, I froze my eggs many years ago, darling. Yes. God bless
you
technology.
You were quite determined.
Yeah. Just in case. So they're in the fridge.
Here, obviously.
No. Not in that fridge that your water's from.
That would be
it's
really
safe
weird.
To drink. Yeah.
Can I drink this water?
Yeah. That'd be really weird. And I
How old were you when you froze your eggs?
Early 30s. But my friend was a fertility doctor, so she was the one that said, you know what, let's just do it. Now's the best time to do it. And then it's an option. You might never use them, but it's an option if you want to. So, yeah. So and I think as a result of that, it means that I'm not neurotic or desperate about this stuff. You know, I'm like, actually, no, I want to make sure I meet the right person that I can create a happy life with, as opposed to, oh, my God, I need to meet somebody to have a child.
And would you want that child to be brought up in London?
Yeah.
Best
city in the world, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go upstairs.
Let's go upstairs, come on.
Perfect.
Let's do this. It's where the magic happens, baby.
So this is your bedroom.
Yes.
Gorgeous. I love the rug.
Stunning, isn't it? Again, this is Ugandan. Wonderful. So, yeah, good old Ronald. He's done a great job, don't you think? Beautiful. The only thing that this doesn't have, which is what I'm looking forward to when I get back, is a bath. I love baths.
So do I.
Yeah.
Do you know, I'm with you. I'm slightly offended by showers.
Yeah.
Because they're so wet.
They're so wet. And so uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable.
And also quick.
Yes. Yeah. And then I always think afterwards, you sort of always, if you have a hair issue, which I have,
which
I don't want
my
hair to get wet.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm sort of desperately trying to keep my hair out of the shower. And it's always steamy and goes frizzy. And I'm like, God, all that effort. If you've got really complicated hair, a shower is completely impossible.
And also then, you know, showers are just...
Where's the cleaning?
Yeah, it's not experience, That is just, it's totally functional, isn't it? Yeah, completely.
Which I don't see why, something you have to do every day
should
of your life.
Should be, yes.
Just
it should be enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit like eating. Just going, well, I'll just put the food in my mouth so I don't starve.
Or I'll just have toast. Yes. No, if I'm going to eat, let's make it worth it.
Make it nice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah. So this isn't your actual home at the moment. It's your home for 3 months.
Yes.
And what is it that makes this home for you now?
So candles, pictures of loved ones, my own books, and my laptop. I cannot be anywhere without my laptop. Yeah.
So your laptop is part of you.
It is. It's terrible, isn't it?
I know, kind of.
And also, do you know what's funny, Sarah? I no longer watch TV. So I, even though there's two TVs in here, I actually don't watch television. So if I consume content, it is on my laptop.
And what do you consume? What's your latest
Well, thing? I like Netflix. Yeah. So I'm a bit of a Netflix binger at the moment. Oh, my goodness. I was upset. The documentary on Bobby Kennedy. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, you must watch it. It's fabulous. It's a four-part documentary on his life. And you just think, if he had been president, the world would be so different. And then, obviously, The Crown, darling.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Yeah, The Crown.
It's brilliant.
So I actually only... I mean, I shouldn't really be saying this, considering I work in TV, but I only watch Netflix and then read the newspapers.
And so do you... Are you quite a hoarder? So do you have a lot of stuff in storage?
At the moment, I have. It's terrible. Because I've moved countries a couple times, I have a huge storage unit in King's Cross. Then I have boxes at three different friends. So once the new place is done and everything's unpacked, I'm so excited to actually be able to have all my stuff in one place, because I actually haven't had all my stuff in one place properly maybe for about a decade, because when I was in America, I still had a lot of stuff in storage here. So, yeah.
So you've been a little bit transient all over the place for a long time.
Finally, you're going to get a home. Yeah, definitely.
And what's the future hold for your career at the moment? What's the plans?
The plans, great question. So at the moment, I'm doing a show with Sky News, which is lots of fun, which is a weekly debate show. And it's a sort of slightly new direction for me. And then on tour with the book, which is fantastic. And what's come out of the book in a weird way is I'm now advising a lot of corporates on their diversity agenda. So it's fun to be able to go into companies and large corporations and work with the senior management to say, actually, if you want to create a more inclusive environment, perhaps these are the steps to do that. So, yeah.
It's a wonderful place to hang out while your home is being built. Yes. Thank you so much for the wonderful James
Oh, OBE. Thank you, darling. MBE, actually. MBE. Not quite. But well, thanks for the promotion.
Should be.
What an honour to spend time with June. I think she definitely deserves the OBE, really. It was wonderful to hear about her life and what she's up to now. And that's it. That's the end of season one for Round the Houses. If you've enjoyed it, please do spread the word on social media or write us a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to know what you made of my guests and conversations. Thank you to June for this episode, and thank you to all of my guests from this season. It's been a pleasure having a nosy around your beautiful homes. Thanks to my producers, Angela Robinson and Matt Hill and Lucy Dearlove at Rethink Audio. And thank you to all of you for listening. See you soon.